Yeah. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I am your host, Mike Lafferty. Today, we're talking about Avengers Infinity War because we're late, but we don't care. Hey, Jacob Blackman, how you doing? You just joined us. And Jacob's still queuing up, so we can't talk to Jacob yet. But our other recurring guest is Nick Garber. How you doing, Nick?
Good. How are you guys?
All right. Always a pleasure to have you back. Walt Rebillard, frequent co-host, is here. How you doing, Walt?
I admit to nothing.
All right. And Christopher McLaughlin is here.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, do you guys like the Banff Podcast? You know you do. That's why you're listening. We're running a Patreon page. Why? Because everyone's doing it, and we are cheap. And you should go and throw a couple of bucks our way to help defray server fees, and just because we're awesome. And all right, that's my one plug. So we're talking about Avengers Infinity War. Who's got a hot take? Nick, what do you think? You're opinionated?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. When I walked out of that movie, it was kind of like the first time I saw The Empire Strikes Back. Having read the Infinity Gauntlet and seen the, you know, the things that they've pulled from that story and brought into this movie, I thought it was amazing. I think, I don't know how they're going to top it with Avengers 4.
Oh, sorry, I was talking to you. I think no matter what you do, I mean, the resolution kind of has to be the letdown. I'm kind of like, Return of the Jedi has a lot of problems. We don't need to talk about them all, but I mean, it didn't do a great job of topping Empire Strikes Back.
No, but I still had that same kind of feeling, you know, like where I just got punched in the gut, but then I caught that breath of like, okay, something's going to come and fix this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I keep having this conversation with my dad whenever I'm over there, and he's like, how could they kill everybody? How can they kill Spider-Man? I'm like, you know, there are sequels planned for all of these. And there at the end, Doctor Strange was, you know, basically saying, I've got a plan. Without saying that, but yeah.
Well, and like some of the deaths, you know, I thought Cap was gonna bite it for sure. I would have bet money on it. Like, not just went away, like real death, like that dude ain't coming back.
But, yeah, like maybe Heimdall or Loki got.
Yeah, and it then even with Loki, I mean, first 10 minutes of the movie, Heimdall's dead, Loki's dead. Hulk gets the crap beat out of him in the most awesome way. Like Thanos was, he looked like Muhammad Ali. He was toying with him. He took a couple of punches and then he just waylaid the shit out of him. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was it. Right off the bat, they're like, hey, things aren't going to go the way you wanted them to. And just let you know. But yeah, I hadn't realized. I had heard they were going to like call the next one Infinity War 2. They changed their mind. And I was like, oh, okay, so we're not doing a sequel. It's all going to be done on one. So that's what I was expecting going into it. And then of course, you get in, and it's the biggest cliffhanger ever. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's probably going to be called, like, Infinity Watch or Endgame or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, what'd you think?
Well, I was kind of amazed at how much I liked it because, like a lot of recent Marvel films, I've gone in expecting to be disappointed because of various factors going in because Thanos is like the second worst comic book villain of all time. It's just, I will flee to another state to avoid reading a Thanos story, you know, and like, you know, assume another identity so that like somebody doesn't send me a Thanos story by accident. And so it had that going against it. And secondly, to me, the Marvel movies work because they're funny and I knew this one was going to be kind of dark. And I wondered if like the tonal shift was going to be doable. And, you know, throw in the fact that this film has about three times as many characters as, you know, you could conceivably get to work in a movie, but darn if they didn't pull it off. I mean, I thought it was funny. I thought it was dramatic without getting overly dark. I think the interplay between those characters is something that we've all been dreaming about for 10 years. And frankly, I didn't realize how much until I actually saw the film. There were so many nice touches, like the fact they brought in James Gunn to do the Guardians stuff. Really, really happy about how true those characters sounded, how true they were to what's been established for them. And best of all, they chose to use almost nothing from like the various infinite infinities that's been keeping Jim Starlin inexplicably employed for the last 20 years. I thought that their take on the story was way more interesting than the original, way more poignant. And it kind of pointed to one of the things I really love about the Marvel films, that they are, hello.
Yep. You're still there. Go ahead.
We hear you.
Oh, good, good. I just, an error message popped up. Oh, yes. Yeah. You know how they're able to slip in big ideas in a way that doesn't feel like a mess. It doesn't feel like, you know, your chest is being crushed with some kind of statement. You know, I'd read a book recently on the history of science, and it was talking about how there's this eternal divide between the people that are optimists and problem solvers, like Dr. Norman Borlaug, a personal hero of mine, and then there's the abject doomsayers like Paul Ehrlich, who is basically like the pet rock of science. And it was so funny to see, you know, like a month or two after I finished that book, you know, there it is in a big budget superhero movie. The people that think that we have to do horrible things in order to survive, and people who refuse to give up on hope and possibility. So I thought that was a neat little subtext. And the thing is, if you weren't looking for it, it wasn't there, and the movie still worked. So just an amazing achievement all around, and really just a super, 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 super time at the movies.
Agreed.
And seriously, if your heart didn't start beating faster at that whole speech that T'Challa gives to the aliens, that you will find nothing but blood and dust here. And then and I was ready to jump out of my seat at that Wakanda Forever. I mean, seriously, if that film didn't move you, you may want to see a doctor because you may be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good set piece battle up there at the end. And I was a real fan of the Thor and Rocket teamed up together. Actually, the whole Thor arc they had in this movie, I thought it was great.
I think Thor stole the show of the whole movie.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I thought that was fun. Hey, Jacob, latecomer, what do you think?
I was completely impressed by the movie. They took what is quintessentially one of the stupidest villains in Marvel. And like, come on. In the comic books, Thanos wants to destroy the universe so he can fuck death. That's his motivation.
Gone to great lengths. I mean, that's a little extreme, but what guy hasn't been like, you know, I'm prepared to do anything to get me a piece of that?
Yeah, but the point is, he's in love with death. He wants to have sex with death. He wants to be death's consort. So I'm going to impress her by destroying the universe. That's a little out there. That is a stupid, stupid villain motivation. This Thanos is an excellent villain. He has an idea. He has a goal. He knows what he needs to do, and he is prepared to do it. He believes, like every true villain, that he is the good guy because he is doing this for the betterment of the universe, not for himself, for everyone else.
Oh, and let us not forget how perfectly cast Thanos is.
He's excellent.
Is there anybody that does World Weary better than Josh Brolin? And the fact that
you were going to say Cable. I'm sorry.
I was waiting for my time to put in the Cable joke.
Yeah, they've already been doing the Thanos Cable jokes in the Deadpool trailers. So
and Brolin is doing it with his voice and whatever expression he can get through the motion capture, and it's still an amazing performance.
Yeah, I mean, what about that Red Skull though?
Oh yeah, that was a great cameo. I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah, I was unprepared for Schmitty.
Yeah, he comes out, I'm like, what? All right. And then it's what's his name? Ross Marquand, the guy from The Walking Dead. Guy does amazing voices anyway.
Yeah.
But just to see how that character, I mean, he was only in it for a little bit, but you can see how he's kind of evolved since we saw him in the first Avenger, you know.
And yeah, that whole scene made me really glad, as always, that I saw it at Alamo Drafthouse, because as part of their pre-show, they like boiled all the previous Marvel movies down to like the two minutes of stuff you need to know to appreciate Infinity War. Right. And honestly, I was so underwhelmed by the original Captain America movie, I'd kind of forgotten how this, you know, how the Skull was actually defeated in that movie. And like, oh, yes, he had the Tesseract. He touched the Tesseract and all that. So this, wow, great callback. So, yeah, kudos to Alamo and the producers for apparently never forgetting that fact in the first place, unlike me.
There was probably, you know, let's watch all these movies before we even start writing them kind of thing going on. Because, you know, there were a lot of callbacks to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they were pulling out some gems.
But you called this book Vansploitation on your Facebook page, Chris, and I have to agree, because it definitely had that kind of 1970s on the side of a Ford kind of line.
Well, that was just a random fact I was putting in for spoiler space. I go through this thing where I like try to I'll get obsessed with a word and look for excuses to use it in, and that was Vansploitation week. You know.
Okay. Cool. We should put out a Vansploitation RPG, or maybe many people already did that with Numenera. Numenera, how the fuck do you say that word anyway?
Numenera.
Numenera, right, there we go. Yeah. Oh, wait, Jacob, you probably know Monty. But yeah, you probably got to ask about that.
I have met Monty a couple of times. He has said yes to me. He recognizes me when we see each other. So
that, God, that makes him sound like an Alzheimer's patient.
Well, the thing is, I have a buddy named Carl, and he has met Monty Cook a couple of times, and like several times, full on conversations about RPGs, hanging out with him for hours and hours and hours at cons. And it is a first meeting every time because he doesn't remember Carl. Carl is like this NPC vague about him.
I used to have a great memory when I was a kid, but somehow in my college years, I did various things to erode it. So I used to sometimes online, someone will ping me in a chat room, or when I was playing City of Heroes, I got bad.
I love that game.
Oh, that was an awesome game. I was on the Guardian server back when it was active, and I might have my main on, people like, hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? And 90% of the time I was cool, could roll with it. But let's say maybe I had 4 or 5 drinks that evening. No. I would just be like, who the fuck are you? And that's the wrong thing to say. That's just rude. But
that's how I am on DC Universe Online. So
is that game any good? Because I keep hearing about it, but
it is good, and it's got some longevity. I started playing it on the PC, and then it moved on to the consoles. They disconnected the Mac server, so that kind of took me out of the fight. So it was free to play on Xbox. I jumped on there, created all my superheroes, put them on there.
Oh, cool. Does it compare to City of Heroes?
It's close. Okay. It's not as good as City of Heroes. City of Heroes just had something special about it. Yeah, it was, you know, DC Universe Online kind of capitalized on that. And I know Marvel was trying to get a game similar to that off the ground for years, and it just eventually just folded.
But every once in a while, I hear a rumor on Facebook or something that someone's going to get an emulator going up, or someone's got the source code and we'll be able to play again. And it just seems like nothing ever really comes of it. So,
yeah, they even plead the fifth.
What are you saying, Jacob?
Something that we have to talk about off air, probably.
The fifth.
All right. Jacob pleads the fifth.
Okay. But to get us back on point, the other thing I really liked about the movie is the fact that they were able to have such the large cast of characters, and yet the movie didn't feel rushed.
Right.
I felt that the transitions between scenes moved very well, and made the movie flow very, very properly. Smoothly. Okay. Yeah. words fail me.
No worries. Hey, Walt. You've been holding your fire up until now. What do you think?
How very apropos. The movie, I think, really benefits from a lot of the great actors that they have. And I was going to do this like little joke of like, oh, I hated it. No, I'm kidding. I'm not eight. But I mean, I really enjoyed the film, and more than just seeing these people on the screen, the screen representations of these comics that we've loved for years, I really enjoyed their portrayal of the characters. Chris Evans as Captain America appears tired. He appears battle weary. T'Challa feels hopeful and invigorating. But most of all, Josh Brolin as Thanos. You know, I'm going to have to agree with everybody here. He really wasn't in the comics. He's really not that great. And you just love to see him get beat up. I think one of the greatest scenes in comics that Marvel Comics in the last few years was from, I believe it was 2014, 2015, Infinity War. Black Bolt screams at Thanos right in his face. And it just rips Adelon to pieces. And I thought that it was one of the greatest scenes that I'd seen in comics in a real long time because of the weight of it and what was going on at the time. But even after that, Thanos was just a big purple thug. But in the movie, you got a sense of some of his motivation. You got a sense of some of what he was going through. I really enjoyed when he said, "What is this going to cost me?" You feel for him on one side, but yet on the other side, you can't believe what an unbelievable prick. Here's a being in the universe that's so super powerful, and he could have anything he wanted. And what he wanted was to make a better world, but instead of using all of that power and responsibility to do something that could be creative, he goes destructive. So in that aspect, you're like, man, you're just another thug with, you know, his finger on the trigger, or finger on the button. But those scenes where he was tender, where even in the midst of like abject violence, he's wiping out half the population of this planet, and he takes this little Gamora and he turns her face and he's like, no, little one, you don't need to pay attention to what's going on over there. Just focus on me. I got you. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay from today. You know, I was like, oh my God, I'm getting misty at this goddamn tyrant. You know, it was
damn onion cutting ninjas.
You know, I mean, and these scenes where he sits there and not only was he an enemy you could hate and an enemy you could kind of sympathize with, he was an enemy you could admire because he gave honor to his enemies, which is something we don't see in a cinema a lot these days. Right. You know, he looks at Tony Stark and he says, you know, I really hope they remember you, you know, because you have been a great adversary. And I mean that.
I've got a point about that when you're done.
Please go ahead.
I have a question about that whole damn scene.
go ahead.
Thanos always spared those he promised to, even when he snapped his fingers. Everyone who he made a deal with to spare, they lived.
Yeah.
Stark lived because Strange asked him to spare him. Nebula lived because Gamora asked Thanos to spare her. And Tony lived. Who else am I thinking of? There was a third instance I can't immediately bring to mind. But in all of those instances where he was asked to spare a person, they lived even at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, the other really great performance, and I'm going to echo what everybody else said, is Rocket and Thor, especially Rocket. I mean, when he's talking about, you know, what he has to lose, you know, he wasn't just talking. You know, there's the one side of him that's the greedy little rodent that's like, yeah, I'm going to get this guy's arm and blah 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 blah. You know, and he's always talking about this stuff he's going to get and how much money he wants and whatnot, but the underlying subtext of that statement he makes, you know, what can I lose? I can lose everything. He's talking about his family. You know, that's that crew that's now his family. But the comedy, Bradley Cooper, oh my God. Well, time to do the captain thing. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed this film for the characterization that these actors brought. And I think... it's really going to be wonderful to see where they go to next. And that brings me, well, before I ask a question, Nick, you had a question about,
Thanos seemed to know Tony, seemed to know Iron Man, seemed to know a lot about him. Now, what I was thinking was, okay, well, this is the dude that flew the nuke up through the Tesseract wormhole and took out all the Chitauri. So that's how he knows him. Maybe, you know, he's that, he seems like that type of villain, at least on screen, that he's a tactician. He wants to know who his adversaries are. He wants to know who his threats are. And then I'm thinking maybe he gains all that information through the gauntlet. So I'm just kind of interested in what everybody else's take on that is.
Don't forget too, that, don't forget too, that in Age of Ultron, Scarlet Witch gives him a vision of everything that he stopped using that by using that nuke.
Right.
And in that instance, he gets a glimpse of Thanos, and Thanos sees him at the same time.
Okay.
It's not too hard.
I missed that part.
Yeah, it's not too hard for Thanos to jump back and say, all right, who's this guy who just friggin' Darth Vader'd into my head? Why did he Darth Vader into my head? And then start researching. So
it's also important to point out that despite the fact that it doesn't happen regularly, aliens are still coming to and from Earth. I mean, they, here's this Zoon. You know,
it's all the rage, man, down on Earth.
Oh my God. But that brings us to the next point. What are we going to see in the next film? Because now we have we obviously have the end of Guardians 2 that sets up a certain character, but we also have from the Infinity Gauntlet storyline a certain person he spares gets the glove. Do you think that they're going to go that way and use that old storyline to push the next one?
Well, I have a prediction how it's all going to end. You want me to ruin this movie a year in advance?
Yes, of course we do. Come on.
Because you know it's just going to be wrong, probably. I don't know what
you're. Oh, well, I'm used to being wrong. I teach political science. I mean, good Lord. my discipline hasn't been right in 100 years. So I'm a Miami Dolphins fan. I eat failure like candy.
I'm a Bengals fan, so I'm with you.
Okay. Well, to me, you know, Gamora is inside the Soul Stone, and the second film is going to need some way for Peter Quill to redeem himself. So I would wager that Peter's love for Gamora gives her the strength and inspiration to undo most of this from inside the gauntlet. And then that will bring back Gamora and redeem Peter. So I think that's going to be a key part of it. And, you know, in all honesty, this whole thing of like being inside the Soul Stone and living out your days in peace, that would be a great exit for all the people that they're pretty sure are not coming back for another movie, like Chris Evans or Robert Downey.
Now, where do you guys see Adam Warlock coming in?
It's already announced he's not going to be in the fourth one.
What?
They're probably saving him for the actual Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yes. And for those of us that think Adam Warlock is phenomenally lame, I'm very happy about that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Thanos was lame too, and they managed to rehab him for this movie and do an interesting
Really, I mean, you've already got three times as many characters as a movie should have, and there are so many of them who are going to need arcs to pay off. You're going to need to pay off Tony and Pepper's storyline. You're going to need to pay off Chris Evans as Captain America. You're going to need to give Brie Larson's Captain Marvel a decent launch. It's my understanding that they have no further plans for the Vision and Scarlet Witch, and the two people that play them have no interest in doing the characters anymore. So you're going to have to pay them off. And to me, bringing in Gold LeMay 70s Jesus that's just going to weigh it down.
Probably the best description of Adam Warlock I've ever heard.
Thank you. Well, I mean, Roy Thomas admits he got the idea from seeing Jesus Christ Superstar on Broadway. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to remember people were doing just a whole lot of drugs back in the 70s.
And then, that was my theory in the cosmic. That was always my theory in the cosmic handbook that most of what we consider to be cosmic comics these days came from the great era of psychedelic drug use.
Oh, absolutely.
And what was funny is the one time in my life I ever got to chat with Jim Starlin, I was trying to think of a gentlemanly way to ask him if some of his 70s stories might have had some chemical enhancement. And before I could get the question out, this guy who weighed like 40 pounds, 30 of it hair,
Oh, wow.
Like, falls across Starlin's table and goes, dude, I used to drop acid and read your comics and listen to the Dead.
There's your answer.
And then just continues like rambling on like this for like 15 uncomfortable minutes. And I just finally just said, I'm going to excuse myself here.
Well, there was an interview. I think maybe it was vulture.com. Mm-hmm. Well, they got the Jim Starlin, and he is happy now because Disney started cutting him decent sized checks for when Thanos shows up. Because one of those, I guess it's well known trivia at this point, is that Starlin owns Thanos. That was a creation he had before he ever came to Marvel.
And the irony of owning a character that he admits is a ripoff of Darkseid.
Well, yeah, he said he came up with the idea in an art class. He wanted to, you know, impress a girl, and the idea of, and didn't want to call it Thanatos because that seemed too long and, you know, unwieldy. So he went with Thanos. But he mentioned, you know, doing psychedelics and wandering around Brooklyn with, you know, other wandering around Manhattan, sorry, running around Brooklyn on drugs is a whole other experience, you know, with guys in the Marvel bullpen. And that's, you know, yeah, to your point, that's where stuff like Adam Warlock. And
well, now, you know, I don't feel so bad about making that suggestion in the cosmic book.
No, I think it's pretty much on the page. You read some of the Adam Warlock stuff and it's not hidden in the subtext. I mean, it's, you know. It's not quite Sergeant Pepper's, but there's some trippy shit in there.
Right. Yeah. It was fun to try to recapture that. In fact, one of the things I was really, 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 really sad that got cut from the cosmic book was we were talking about, you know, trying to do adventures where like your enemy is like the embodiment of love and the embodiments of love and hate. And like your typical gamer is like asking stuff like, can I use a trip attack against them? And I threw in this parithetical reference, which unfortunately got cut. It's like, does hate even have feet?
There are some situations that might be better suited for a narrative role-playing system.
Yes, yes.
Just for any listeners who might not catch what Chris is talking about, he helped write the Cosmic Handbook for Mutants and Masterminds.
Yes, yes.
So, that brings me back to one question I meant to ask you. You are the guy who wrote Time of Crisis, Time of Vengeance.
Yes, indeed.
There was a third one, wasn't there?
There was a third one that was accepted onto the schedule and then promptly forgotten about. But I mean, the outline is still with whoever's in charge of that sort of thing. And if they ever want to do it, they know how to contact me.
Oh, that's sad. All right. Anyway, so you're the guy most recently who has written big world ending crisis books for a superhero role playing game.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
All right. Let's say we got a listener somewhere who has a big yellow notepad in front of him right now, trying to think about how I can do this at my table with my players. What advice would you have for the hypothetical listener?
Well, the first thing you absolutely have to know, you have to do, is to know your players, because the great recurring thing in these type of stories is that the reset button is going to get hit. And there are a lot of people who, with justifiable reasons, are just going to blow a gasket over that. It's just going to feel like such a cheat. You know, it's just, you know, people who are like coming from more of a, like a Call of Cthulhu background, you know, where, you know, actions have consequences and death has consequences and tough choices result in tough results. You know, to the extent that you're going to hit the reset button at the end, you really, really need to know your players in advance. You know, because if everybody gets come back at life again, there are certain audiences that's not going to go over well. Now, by the same token, there's going to be audiences that, you know, love the comics, know the tropes, are there for the tropes. They're going to be ticked off if everybody doesn't come to life at the end. So as you plot the scenario, you've got to have some backup plans for, you know, if the play, you know, where the players can get things back on track. And that was part of the challenge, especially the last chapter of Time of Crisis, because Omega is just so, our dark side Thanos homage is just so much more powerful than just about any player character you're ever going to allow to be played. You know, I mean, the whole chapter is just ways that you could possibly beat him, that don't feel like a cheat. And then, you know, I even threw in some blatant Deus Ex Machinas, like just if you don't want this to be the last adventure you ever won with these players, here's some ways that you can save the day that don't feel like total cheats. So yeah, it's really a lot of planning.
Hey guys, I have to step away for just 1 second. Walt, can you take over?
You do your thing.
And the final thing I think you need to keep in mind is given that you're going to be dealing with insanely powerful forces, you have to constantly think about ways that the players won't feel totally helpless. I mean, you have to a certain extent, you have to put a beat down on them just so they get a sense of the consequences. You know, as in time of crisis, I did it by blowing up the world and the players wake up amongst the ashes and the fragments. Essentially, it's like, yeah, well, everything was destroyed and there wasn't anything you can do about it. But here you get a miraculous chance to undo it. But, you know, we've already laid down the marker that whoever you're dealing with has already destroyed all of reality once, you know, so hopefully that has them feeling properly outgunned. But you've got to have some way that makes them feel like they're not completely wasting their time. You know, to use Infinity War as an example, while Thanos was going to be virtually untouchable through the film, they threw in his four kids who, you know, died rather nicely. They, you know, to borrow a line from Farm Film Report on the classic SCTV, they blowed up real good. They were very satisfyingly defeated. You know, I mean, everybody from Squidward on to, you know, the super gothy one to, you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, even though the heroes seemingly lose at the end, you know, they got in their punches. You know, it felt like, you know, they weren't completely being shut out and stomped into the ground. So, yeah, it's a tricky balance to walk. But those are some things I kept in mind when I did it.
Did you feel that that Marvel Studios stole your script for the current iteration of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because that's what this season's about.
No. I only ever had one idea that was ever copied to any extent, and I'm not alleging plagiarism because there's no way that the actual people responsible for it could have found out. But do you remember about 10 years ago when they put out a movie called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
Yes.
Yeah. I basically pitched that central idea to Pinnacle, like back around 2000, like right after they got out, right after they began to crawl out of the cyber games mess, and they were doing this series of games called Weird Wars. You know, they were doing like Supernatural World War II, and I think they eventually did like Supernatural Vietnam and Supernatural World War I.
Don't forget Supernatural Rome.
Yes. And I was talking to them about doing the Civil War version of that. And like the basic idea behind Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, that was going to be the crux of that project. And so, yeah, and you know, that somebody basically used my RPG idea. Again, they didn't plagiarize. There's no way they could have found out about a conversation between me and Shane Hensley from 15 years ago. But seeing my idea turn into a movie that made, you know, like $5 at the box office, you know, had some feelings about that.
Nice.
Hey guys, I'm back. Sorry about that. The White House does a lot of mail order and, wanted me to come out and talk to him and sign some stuff, so we're back.
So can I use a blunt force segue?
Yeah, blunt away.
Speaking of redoing and rehashing old ideas into new things, Mr. Garber has a project I'm sure he'd love to talk about.
Oh, yes.
That might involve the reinvigoration of a character.
Yep. Well, we're talking about Phantom Hawk. Man, so much. I've been developing this character for 25 years, and I've been drawing him in a comic book for, I don't know, the last seven.
Well, so, I'll tell you what. Let's just start page one. Who is Phantom Hawk?
Okay, Phantom Hawk is a story about Master Sergeant Max Malone, Special Forces Communications Sergeant, who gets critically wounded in Afghanistan and recruited into a CIA-sponsored program using nanotechnology to repair, regrow bone and tissue through stem cells in the body. So, and when he was in this project, he gets set up for treason and theft and murder and all that stuff. So he's on the run, and he has very limited resources and very limited time to kind of figure things out on who set him up. And, you know, then there's a little something inside the book that really kind of makes the clock tick. I don't want to give too much away, but that's the synopsis of who Phantom Hawk is. He starts off as a guy just on a mission trying to clear his name and get those responsible, and he turns into this reluctant hero as more exposure through media and the local population of Crestview City seeing him around. He kind of just is forced into this hero role, which is what we're going to deal with now in the newest series, is him taking on that role as costumed crime fighter.
Can we talk about the intro video to the Kickstarter?
The intro video, which is 4 minutes long. And I'm not going to lie, I was drinking. I had a few cocktails. I was trying to think of the intro video, and then it just kind of popped in my head. What if it was like a mission briefing? I know I've been in more of those than I care to remember. So I set it up like there was a government spec ops team that was going to go after Phantom Hawk, and that this was the mission briefing, even though the team doesn't even show up in this arc, but there's always that looming possibility that the government is going to want to reclaim their property, which is the nanotech. So I threw on some multicam uniform that I still have from my days in the military and wrote out a mission briefing. I didn't go full op order. Thank God, that would have bored everybody. But essentially, it was a very abridged Warno, you know. So it was fun to do. And Brian Enright did the editing for it. And I set up a blue screen. He goes, well, do you have any ideas for the background? I'm like, I don't know. Just make it look cool, man. So
every art order I've ever submitted, by the way.
Oh yeah, you know, even when I was a graphic designer, I mean, when I'd ask the client, hey, what do you want to do, and they're like, I don't know, man, just make it look cool. Well, here I am as the client, and I'm like, I don't know, just make it look cool, you know. But here's the overall idea.
Excel at that.
Oh yeah. Well, it's music to my ears because now I have free reign to do whatever I want, you know, within reason, you know.
So if people want to catch this on Kickstarter, they need to search for The Phantom Hawk Returns.
The Phantom Hawk Returns, yeah. And you'll see my lovely 4-minute intro video where I am briefing a special operations team. And it shows a lot of the artwork from the original series, what I'm calling Volume 1.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that begs the next question is, if I want to get the original series, if I want to see what it looks like, you know, already in print, the stuff that exists, how do I get that?
Don't forget to ask for the sketch cover for number 5.
The sketch cover for number 5. I just found a whole other stack of those too, Walt. So if you're worried that there wasn't any left, there's tons of them. The best way to do that would be to send me an email. NickGarberDesigns@gmail.com, or you can find me at NickGarberArt.com. On Twitter, Nick Garber Art on Facebook, or you can go to the Apogee Comics page on Facebook and send us a message through there, and we'll set something up.
Okay, cool. So Comixology is not going to be a place to find it then?
Not yet. I pulled a lot of that stuff off when we decided we were going to retool the series, not exactly reboot it, but carry it forward. That's another thing for longtime fans of Phantom Hawk. We're kind of in a time jump right now. This is about a year after everything that was going on with that first arc. You know, it's going to bring you on to here where we bring in some new villains and introduce an old villain that everybody kind of loves will pop back up, because Phantom Hawk just loves kicking the shit out of this guy.
All right. Now, I don't mean to be an asshole, believe it or not, but I remember you posted some preview pages on your Facebook page this week. And
yes,
great looking art. And there is a dark clad vigilante with a cape perched on top of let's call it a gargoyle.
A gargoyle, yes. You're going to go with the Batman correlation.
Well, no, what I'm going to say, Nick, is explain to me how he's different from Batman. Well, it's some cool looking art, but I can see someone thinking this guy kind of looks like Batman with a couple guns.
This is a question that I get quite a bit, actually. And we'll go back to the beginning when I designed him. The old Phantom serials were a huge inspiration in creating this character, as far as look. And originally, that's what it was geared more towards, was looking like the Phantom. You know, he carried two 1911 pistols, you know, things like that. As I got older and I started developing them and had other influences, Batman obviously being a huge one, you know, the cape and Cal Vigilante. What makes him different is that he didn't set out to be this guy. You know, he had he's had traumatic events in his life being a soldier. I mean, what soldier doesn't have any type of traumatic thing to happen to him? But where he differs from Batman is, one, he's not a detective. You know, he relies on his detective friends, you know, to figure out some of these things. He's a soldier. He will take a life if he has to. You know, where Batman has that, oh, no killing, no guns. Phantom Hawk will shoot you in the fucking face.
That's he wants to get the job done. I get
he wants
that.
To get the job done. You know, he's mission focused constantly. It's similar to Batman. Batman's always mission focused. But this guy will do whatever it takes to get the job done. You know, if you're in his way one way or the other, you're going to get out of his way. And he's going to take the quickest route. He's not going to worry about, you know, snapping wrists and things and putting you in a whole bunch of pain where you're just immobilizing out of the fight. This guy's just going to off you.
All right,
cool. And you see that in the first arc. You know, the first thing he does is pull out the Karambits and, you know, goes for a kidney shot on Killjoy. Trying to think of some of the other differences between him.
Well, one of the big differences that I noticed right away in reading the series is that Batman is a super jack of all trades. He's like a freaking multi-tool that has everything in it. But periodically, he's surrounded by butlers. So it's like, here comes the cop. Your clue, sir. Here comes the Commissioner Gordon. Your bat light, sir. You know, here's his actual butler. Your underwear, sir. I mean, he can do everything and anything. He's a master of 27 martial arts, which I can't even begin to tell you
how a dozen languages.
How stupid that sounds. So, but I mean, that all aside, the great thing that I really enjoyed about Phantom Hawk was the supporting cast. The supporting cast had roles to play. They were an integral part of the story. They didn't feel like throwaway characters. They felt like real people who actually. And that's one of the we've had this discussion before on the show, and where I disagree with Jason. You know, I think Batman is the worst crime fighter I've ever seen because of the fact he can solve every crime and put the guy in jail. But you're putting him in a place where he can get out of that. He can just go and murder more people indiscriminately. You know, if the courts aren't going to convict him, what's the sense? And is everybody in Batman's world so freaking helpless that they can't take this guy? Somebody else can't take this guy out. I mean, we have special forces operators that would kick Batman to the curb. Nobody else is going to take out the Joker or the Penguin or track down these other people. I mean, how many people do these villains have to hurt before they get to somebody that says, oh man, I'm going to Mac Bull in this.
Well, you realize you're talking about the current arc in like the Bat titles, right?
Oh, is it?
Yes. Cause Batwoman, took out Clayface with a sniper rifle and half of the 800,000 bat people are for it. And half of the other 800,000 bat people are against it.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't caught up to that. So now I have something to look
and
forward to.
And I have to stay away from some of those books because I don't want it to influence what I'm doing with, you know, Phantom Hawk. You know, I don't want it to be, you know, so on the nose, you know. He's totally like Batman. No, he's
the
not.
The reason those characters keep coming back is because they are the intellectual property of and they want to continue to play with their toys. I've had this conversation many times with many people. If the DC universe were run like the real world, they wouldn't be going into the swinging door Arkham Asylum where they can constantly be getting out and no, they would be going to progressively more security heavy institutions. And if they could continue to get out of those, guess what? Bruce knows this guy, I think his name is Superman, who has this thing. It's called the Phantom Zone Projector. Bye-bye.
Well, even in the other side of that, we've seen the consequences of Batman not doing his job in the Injustice series.
And I just want to say the whole Phantom Zone thing did not work out well at all. In the,
you're forgetting one key thing here, okay?
Yes.
Batman realizes these people are mentally ill, and by our legal system and our ethical system and a good many of our moral systems are not responsible for their actions. And Batman's eternal hope is they'll be cured. And that's why I have always thought that like one of the great unsung parts of Batman's Rogues Gallery is, believe it or not, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, because they were cured. You know, they proved that, you know, that Batman is not completely foolish to believe that these people can be helped. And if you lock them up all in the Phantom Zone, then they spend the rest of their lives insane. And if Batman has a shred of humanity in him, that's going to bother him.
Didn't they rehab Clayface too in the comics?
Which one?
Detective. He was rehabbed for a long time.
There have been four different Clayface characters in continuity, so you're going to have to specify.
Aren't there five? It seemed like there was a fifth one at one point.
I'm just going to tear up my geek card right now. So, all right, no, you guys win.
Hold on. We'll just pull out the Bible and see.
All right. Well, I'm getting to where I need to wrap things up. We touched on Return of the Phantom Hawk. Check it out on Kickstarter right now. 30 days left. Chris, did you want to talk about that one thing?
Yeah. Well, for those of you who want to see a book that has some of my words in it, the collected edition of Rogues Gallery is now available in PDF. And the good people over at Green Ronin at their store, you can pre-order the Dead Tree version, and then they will give you the PDF version right now for only $5 American.
$5?
Yes.
Say it ain't so.
God damn.
Yes,
that's a good deal,
and you'll get to see all of your favorites from the weekly PDF series, created by such top creators as Aid Smith and Steve Kinson, and well, me, and there are also some new villains in there that haven't making their world premiere debut in the collected edition. So even if you were with us through the weekly PDFs, there's some brand new stuff for you.
Okay, cool. That sounds good. All right, folks, I got to wrap things up. Thanks, everybody, for coming out. And thanks to our listeners for listening. Once again, please tell your friends about us on social media. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And just send us warm and fuzzy thoughts. All right, thanks a lot. And talk to y'all later. Bye.